Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. Hello, David.
Hello, Joy. Welcome to the studio tonight.
Well, thank you for coming in and helping out because Patel is not well, the poor darling.
Oh, that's a pity.
I told him to go.
And our audience is shocked at that.
Well,
evidence.
Yes, they should be. I told him to go to bed and stay there because I don't want him spreading any germs here.
Now, get well, Tal. We'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Maybe. He might still... Oh, no, it's not yet next week that it's the Joy birthday, is it? It's one after.
It's one after.
We're going to be 21, David. That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting indeed. I think it deserves some applause.
Oh, you do love those little buttons, don't you?
I do indeed.
I was telling someone the other day about when we were talking about Jehovah's Witness, how we had door knocking the whole time. On the 30th of October, we interviewed Sally Goldner. And we sort of felt like we'd only just started the conversation and the show was over. So we've invited her to come back again. My people got in touch with her people, which means that Sally and I swapped emails, I think. So, Sally, welcome back to Spirit Lounge.
Thanks for having me back. I've been let in the door again.
Now, I was listening to the podcast of the last show, and you're an activist. Drummer, singer-songwriter, comedian, cowgirl, you're bi, you're trans, you're Jewish, and you're a world championship wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
Is that about cover it? I forgot activist.
I think you got that, but just perhaps it... Oh, look, there's probably a few more. Introvert, highly sensitive person, punster, all that sort of thing, yes.
So for someone who's all those things, why and how World Championship Wrestling?
Oh, look, it's just, I think, one of those happy childhood memories. I don't know, someone who grew up with it in... born in 1965 and remembering the classic the lunchtime Sunday mainly, but also there was lunchtime Saturday hour of fun that at that time was hosted by Jack Little, other hosts, and later on the now late Ted Whitten hosted it as well, which not many people remember. And it was just, well, was it good, darn, clean, wholesome fun? I don't know about clean, but anyway, it was close enough. And it's just something maybe that stuck, I suppose.
Did you practice on your sister?
No one's listening. Yes, I did. we had and still in our family home, and they went, when my parents retired into state, they went up there. We had these couches that were really cool. The seat was about the level of one rope up. The armrest was two ropes up, and the top at the back of the neck was three ropes up. So that was how we saw it anyway. So, yes, there was all sorts of flying body presses and all sorts of things. But, of course, no one got hurt because no one really, you know, it can happen, but not too many people really get hurt in wrestling, says my halo going over my head or something.
I'm sure they get injured. I mean,
they do.
Yeah.
They do. And, of course, every WWE video has a thing at the start, you know, saying, do not try this at home.
No animals were harmed in the making of this. Oh, no, that's not right, is it? So you still watch it, though? You're still into it?
I still do, yeah. And buy a few DVDs, and there is I better give it a plug. There's a great group on Facebook called The Botched Spot, B-O-T-C-H-E-D. Hey, botchies out there. And it's a good group because it's sort of for devotees, but a lot of wrestling fans are sort of take it a bit too seriously, and this group doesn't. So there's lots of fun and still into it, and only by watching highlights on the net. But there is now an online network for one of the bigger wrestling organisations that you can subscribe to for a relatively low price.
Goodness me. You are a bit of a fanatical fan.
A bit of a fanatical fan, but I suppose it's a chill out from some of the more serious worlds that sometimes I end up inhabiting.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you can yell at it, and it's like people who are so into the footy or other things, you can actually release.
That's right, and sit there and do. It has actually, the two worlds have merged at the Equal Marriage Rally back in March, about 3 weeks before, May, sorry, 3 weeks before that, a former World Wrestling Entertainment stalwart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, who had the character of being a beer-drinking redneck, who now he's retired and he does a radio podcast. Hello to radio podcasters everywhere. And he came out in support of equal marriage, so I used that as a... And his famous catch cry was, he'd get the fans after everything he said to go, "Oh, hell yeah," in unison. So I said, I did a bit, I combined activism and wrestling and said, "So if you want equal marriage, give me an oh, hell yeah." And we had 4,000 people going, "Hell yeah."
I thought you were going to tell us that they had wrestling before the Equal Love Rally.
Well, look, it could be a way of getting more numbers along to the rallies. Ellie Hogg, if you're listening, and the Equal Love Crew.
We're going to have jelly wrestling or mud wrestling. Look,
I announced that at Midsummer Carnival a few years ago. It was a career highlight. I still haven't got a call from Vince McMahon to go on WWE, but we'll work on it.
Oh, that's fabulous. So you are an activist, aren't you?
I suppose I am. I mean, some people don't like that word. Oh, no, these activists, I don't know. But activist, advocate, whatever, really. I don't really care about the word. I do what I do, and there's probably lots of words to describe it, yeah.
How did that start?
How did it start? I think, without knowing it, I followed my heart. We discussed last time a bit of my coming out story, and I came out... And, I joined the group, Fab Group Seahorse, and that's more of a social group, but I wasn't really the social event type of organising type of person. And then as I settled myself down in terms of my own gender identity journey, I started just getting involved in stuff. I wanted to do more, and without realising it, yeah, I was just being true to myself and doing what I think I was meant to do in this lifetime on this planet. And so I just started, was involved with Transgender Victoria from the start, and have really kept going, I suppose.
Because you started transitioning very early in the whole, I guess, transsexual journey in Australia, when there wasn't much known about.
I suppose, I wouldn't say early, I'd say middling. I mean, so... Right. I will say began to edge out in the mid-90s and realised my need to live full-time as female in early 1998, and had done so by the middle of 98. True, there wasn't a lot going on. There were still some pretty prejudicial attitudes towards trans people in all areas such as media and day-to-day life and all the rest of it.
And in the LGBTI community.
Well, yeah, there was some pretty nasty stuff at that time from elements of gay and lesbian. And let's call out a small elephant in the room. At times there are prejudices, I'll say, within T. There were people back then who thought unless you had surgery, you weren't a real transsexual. And unfortunately, there are still some attitudes I hear now that, oh, unless you transition, you're not real, and these people who are genderqueer aren't real enough. And I almost, I just want to do a head desk at that heaven's sake, we're in the same boat, come on. And no, you know, people aren't going to say, well, oh, you've had surgery, so you're really nice, we won't discriminate against you, but oh, you haven't, so we'll discriminate against you. If they think there's, if they're going to discriminate, they're going to discriminate. And I think we've got to stick together. Yeah, so let's get past that.
Sally, we're going to come back and talk more about this in a minute, but you have chosen the music again tonight. And our first track is Getting By Pete and James. Tell us a bit about this.
Well, yeah, this is a track that's been around for about 6 to 8 years, written by my one of my dear, dear friends, sung by James Dominguez, who's the Vice President of Bisexual Alliance Victoria, and a dear friend from bi and polyamorous communities, Pete Hayden. And they put this together some years ago, and it's still flying around. And I thought, well, we'll have a bee buzzing into GLBTI and play it on Joy, which I don't think has happened before.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And we are talking to Sally Goldner. Sally, how would you describe your spirituality?
I would describe, I'll put it that in two parts, in terms of my spirituality. I'm going to break it into two parts that often get mistakenly intermingled. I believe in a God. I don't believe in the God of the Christians or anything. I believe in a God, spirit, formless stuff, you know, whatever else you want to call it, creativity, force, whatever. I firmly believe in that. And in terms of what might be called religion, I would call myself culturally Jewish. I still feel a connection to that, but I don't go to a building on a weekly basis. For an unlikely quote for a nice Jewish girl, there was a Buddhist who said, I carry my temple inside me everywhere or something. I just like to chill out and have time with myself and meditate and reflect. And it was really cool. Last week I got up to visit my parents in Queensland and had four relatively quiet days, with the exception of Mum offering me food and Dad offering me alcohol, which, you know, you've got to accept to be polite. But I do actually love getting away to the country or the beach and just, you know, grounding in nature. And so that's my, we'll say, spirituality. But the thing is, it's, I make it clear that that's mine. It's for me. And if someone else hears this and goes, yeah, that's cool for me, and that's cool, but if someone doesn't, that's cool too. And I do get grumpy when people try to push their version of faith, spirituality, religion, theism, and that word in particular, believing in a God, just seems to be so forgotten. I'm not pushing mine on anyone else. I don't like it when anyone else does.
Has it been a real struggle for you to get to this point?
It has, yeah, in that I look at the first 29 and a half years of my life, which we looked at last time before 27 April 95 when I got the truth about trans, and I just think I often struggle to try to make sense of that first part of my life, and including in that faith, spirituality, religion, because for a nice Jewish girl, I spent all 13 years of school at a Christian boys' school, and it wasn't fundamentalist by any means. I believe that what they taught was the true spirit of Jesus Christ, but it was pushed pretty hard, and I think that's probably what put me off it for a long time. The Jewish aspect was, we'll say, the less ideal aspects, you've got to donate to Israel to be really Jewish, that sort of thing, and that put me off for a long time as well. And I did go on a trip to Israel at about when I was 19, and there, again, it was this push down the throat thing, which I didn't like, and I was a bit annoyed by that. So for a long time, yeah, it took me time to get onto my true path on so many things. But gradually, as I found my true sense of self in terms of gender identity, in terms of sexual orientation, everything else began to fall into place. And I found out where Judaism sat with me in terms of culture and community more than perhaps religion. that I looked at other things and have a sense of the elements of Wiccan pagan. And one of my dear friends, as I pick it up, I'm not that people can see it on radio, gave me this wonderful rose quartz crystal. And so I have a respect for the elements, and the rose quartz crystal is very grounding for me. All those sorts of things. So I had to find my own particular hotchpotch potpourri path and work it out, and got there. So it has been a battle, but I don't like battle metaphors, but I feel like I've won.
Do you think it is more difficult for trans people to go on a spiritual journey than it is for others?
Ooh. I had two conflicting thoughts went through my head. I think the first part of me said, because it is still so difficult to get past the trans part of oneself, to settle that down. But of course, at least here in Australia, we're beginning to get somewhere. I think people can often forget the other parts. But then I think of my friend Kayleen, who gave me the rose quartz crystal. I think of the first time I heard of a transgender rabbi in a progressive synagogue was a wonderful guy in America, Reuben Zelman. So they've found it. Other people have. So it depends. I suppose it's how people can, if they if are willing to face it. And I can totally get, given the stuff that trans people face, and I suppose I'm particularly thinking of it at this time of the year, is that we're only a week away from Trans Remembrance Day, and how difficult it can be to get to be your true self, that I think it can be challenging, but if you can do it, it's rewarding too.
I think that unfortunately still a lot of religious organisations that are not accepting of trans people. I heard a story of a woman who was told she could only go to church if she dressed how God created her. And that was as male. And so she was dressing as a male and to go to church, and then everywhere else she was living her life as who she was.
Yeah.
A female.
That would have just been so disconnecting, obviously, to not be able to have your spirit, the true spirit of your gender identity, at the place of spirituality. Gosh, that would have been really hard.
That sort of stuff is so damaging, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. Totally damaging. That, I've been thinking about this a fair bit lately, that one of the basics for human interaction, maybe the basic, is trust. And trans people face betrayal so often from so many systemic powers, religion, health system, judiciary, not so much here in Victoria now, but police and all these things, politicians at times. Yes, things are changing, but it's no wonder trans people are wounded. And I think that that's a real issue. So it is about restoring trust, which we can do via advocacy and rebuild things, but in the end, also, I think each individual has to do their best, but also have other individuals assist them to rebuild trust as well.
Now, the next song that you've chosen, Sally, is Dreams by Van Halen. Can you tell us a bit about this song?
I pulled this one out the other night. I just, as a bit of a rock fan and a country fan, I just love this as an energising up song, and you can get there. And I think for a show like Spirit Lounge, it works for me. It's possible. And given that we are free spirits and it's a free world, you have my permission to play air guitar or air drums as you come along with this next song.
And this is Dreams with Van Halen. And you are on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Now, Sally, we were talking about your spirituality and the journey to where you are today. And I'm wondering about your sexuality. How would you identify?
Now, today, 2014, I use the term bi/pan, but it's been somewhat, we'll say, a gradual evolution. So going back, 1995, I've come out as trans, but still, you know, sort of living a large percentage of life identifying as male, only occasionally as female and attracted to women. So I would have at that point still called myself heterosexual. And by 97, though, as I often say, the fog was clearing about around my life. I had, for the first time in my life, the visualization, if you like, of myself being with a male. And it was a bit startling at first because I'd never thought about that. But I think what had saved me was, was the person who had probably been close to being a lifesaver as I was going through difficult times prior to coming out as trans had come out to me as bi. And only that person's same-sex partner, their current opposite-sex partner, and myself knew. So that was a pretty helpful thing for that person to do. And I'm saying that person just to, you know, keep that person as anonymous as possible. So I knew what bisexuality was, and that was really helpful. So I thought, oh, okay, I'm attracted to, as I would have thought of it then, both genders. I'm bisexual. And there was a group at the time called the Melbourne Bisexual Youth. I was a slightly older youth by then at 32 and went to them, and there's still a few of those people around, and they actually handed me some material from those days, which I must get over to the archive. And then there was the group Bi Victoria, and they did something really cool in 2001 as they were setting up and developing their website. They consulted with trans and intersex groups and said, look, we recognise that there might be more than two, they said to trans, two genders. How do you want us to define bi? We want to be inclusive of you. And so they came up with the definition of attracted to more than one gender, which I was really cool about. The Latin purists hated it, you know, bi is two, you know. So I'd stuck with that definition because of that emotional connection to the very warm, empathic approach of Bi Victoria for a long time. And to be honest, I hadn't heard the word pansexual, pan meaning knowing no boundaries of. But over time, I've realised that, you know, for me, it's about the person, not the gender. And so pansexual's more, is just as much a part of it. So, yeah, that's why I'm now at, you know, sort of bi/pan. But really, it's just about, in plain language, it's about the person and, you know, a hug or, you know, the intimacy or whatever really doesn't matter so long as there's the right attraction to me. That's the thing.
So you would also identify as polyamorous?
Well, yes. Yeah. So adding a third element in, I'm open to the idea of being in more than one relationship at a time, provided it is consensual and transparent or ethical. So everyone knows what's going on and everyone consents to that. And I've had one situation where I was in that situation so far. It hasn't quite happened that I've been in a long-term situation yet, but I'm open to it. But it doesn't mean, I suppose, anyone has to be in multiple relationships. It's just that if it happens, it happens, and that's cool too.
So you're sort of open to lots of different options.
Yeah, that's right. I just...
You're quite trendy because I would see a lot of young people as pan and open to...
Yep.
Lots of, I mean, so many young people, I think, these days don't identify as straight or gay or whatever it is. They say they're pan.
Totally. I mean, we had back in September the From Blues to Rainbows research released. And, I mean, I look at that where, you know, first of all, a third were identifying in terms of their gender identity as other than binary, so, you know, genderqueer, non-binary, etc. Their sexual orientation, I can't remember the exact figure, I think it was 61% were using bisexual, pansexual, queer, and from memory I think it was a total of about 7% were either in open relationships or multiple relationships. So if that's 7% of young trans people, I wonder what the figure is for we'll say, the rainbowish community, and then the society as a whole. It would be very interesting to try to get some research and, you know, quantify that. But some things to do, yeah.
When I was at our church conference in Chicago last year, we didn't have male or female toilets.
Yay.
We had toilets, and there was a A4 page on each door telling you why.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically, I must admit it was a bit off-putting when I bowled into the toilet and there's all these guys at the urinal. And I thought, okay, this was obviously the men's toilet beforehand.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got used to it. It was fine. But is that important for trans people, that things like that happen? Because so many people now, as you say, don't identify as male or female.
Yeah.
You know, they don't use he or she.
Mm-hmm. It is really important for a lot of trans people, but, and it doesn't matter whether they're, you know, identifying as other than binary or no pronoun at all. It's just, you know, it is about respecting that individual for who they say they are. And that's the important thing. So, you know, it's about if a trans woman is identifying as female, we have gendered toilets, female. But yeah, you know, if we could magically, you know, sort of change existing toilets and get them, we would just have them that they would be accessible for all abilities and equal for all genders. And it goes beyond things like trans and other things, because there was a really good report a few months ago, or some time ago now, on, you know, what happens when dad is out with 5-year-old daughter and 5-year-old daughter needs to go to the loo. Who looks after her? You know, that sort of thing. And so gendering in toilets is just, to me, a waste of time. So your situation where they, you know, they'd, you know, there were still the urinals in use. I mean, if we have to, we're not arguing for modifying existing toilets. We'd just say shut the urinals off and everyone use the stalls, which would be a simpler approach. But throw one other experience in, two other things in on that. One was at the Health Indifference Conference in Sydney in 2010. There was a very interesting thing that happened, was that, oh, you say cisgender people, we had pansexual toilets set up, and some cisgender people who are used to binary toilets said, well, this is really uncomfortable for us. Now, yes, it is, but now you know what we go through, or people whose gender expression, but even if they're not trans, differs. And there was a really nice story just before tonight. I was at Zoe Bell Gender Centre's AGM, and one of their number is a teacher, and they got the list of uniforms that came around, and it wasn't gendered. It just said, well, the summer uniforms are these options and the winter uniforms are. And my friend emailed the sort of principal of all the campuses, and the principal said, yeah, I did that deliberately. And I'm glad someone noticed. And I think that's really cool, so that, you know, people can feel comfortable as who they are and not be boxed into a gender identity because of the body recorded at birth that assumes an identity.
So changes are happening.
Yeah.
But is it a big struggle? Are you having to fight for these changes?
It's still pushing, but I feel like we are getting somewhere. The last 2 years for trans have been phenomenal. It seems to have just gone, everything seems to have gone happily exponential on so many levels. And the fact that here was this school where the principal just did the right thing. And the interesting irony was my friend, who is trans, was almost so used to looking for the, well, where's the gender for these uniform classifications, that when someone did it in inverted commas right, it was almost a shock. But so it's still scratching the surface for things like school uniforms. But I think people also, if it's explained reasonably, are getting it. And I think that's welcome. But there are also some trickier stories. And unfortunately, to keep it short, the religious schools issue can still be a real problematic one, where they have the exemptions.
Yeah, and also, what about in country towns? How do you go there?
Victoria, there's, I call it the highway belt, which seems to be showing some progress. So if people, you know, can perhaps imagine a map of Victoria, starting down at Warrnambool with the Fab Yum Cha group and Brophy Youth Services, work through Geelong, around to Ballarat and Bendigo, up to Shepparton and then up to Wodonga. So sort of those main regional centres. Degrees of progress. I was up in Shepparton a few weeks ago. Six schools in the Safe Schools Coalition. And some people who aren't at, they were at the schools in the area who aren't members of the school, but let's say trans people needing to transition and the school isn't being supportive, but they'll go to some teachers and say, well, this is my name and pronouns, and the teachers will say, yeah, I'm going to recognise you. So Shepparton has got to be up there now, along with, say, Daylesford, I think, is one of the leading regional areas in Victoria. So we're spreading. It's like everything. It's just, you know, one step at a time. But then you look back 3 or 4 years later and go, oh, we've taken more than a few steps. So it is coming along, but still distance to travel. Whereas Wodonga, for example, when we were up in the north, my colleague and I were up in the northeast for a few days, they've have only just started, but things are moving. So it's spreading. And you know, I just feel like it's like anything. We keep putting the effort in, we'll get there on all this stuff. And it does seem like there's so much happening, on every level, including regional and rural as well.
And you're on Spirit Lounge and we're talking to Sally Goldner. Sally, what can religious groups do to be more welcoming, affirming of trans people?
In a way, you've answered the question within the question, and that is to be welcoming and affirming, which
but
might sound incredibly obvious.
But how could they do
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, okay, so it is about recognising that person as their gender identity. And, you know, that might mean, I'll say at least from the point of view of a progressive Jewish synagogue, if there are areas where, whilst it probably wouldn't happen in a progressive synagogue, but some that are, say, in between progressive and orthodox, if a trans woman is now living as a woman, she's entitled to sit with women, those sorts of things. Working out things. I know of a Jewish couple where the parent had transitioned to female, and they worked out a way that both parents could be at the altar for their child's bar mitzvah, things like that. So people are working it out. And I think probably as trans is steadily, we'll say, demystifying in people's eyes, and people accept the reality of trans existence and are more positive about it, people work out ways. And so I think it's just working it through and not blocking, but because there usually are ways. So from my experience with Judaism, but Christianity, you're the expert there, but it is just about celebrating that person for who they are.
I think also it probably comes back to educating people.
Yeah.
You know, sitting down with people and saying, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
For this person. Let this person tell their story.
Let the person tell their story. And similarly, I'm thinking of the various education things that I do. Setting up a safe, relaxed space for people to ask questions, and knowing that if they get a couple of words wrong, so they might say, so you've changed from male to female, for example. Well, that's not the biggest sin in the world if it's an if you're wanting to educate people, and just saying, look, we will not eat you if you get 2 words wrong. And if, you know, the thing that I say when I do training is, if you've got a question and you're not sure how to ask it, say, I've got a question. I'm not sure how to ask it. The question is, and then people go, oh, phew. And then they can ask, and set up a safe way to do that and communicate. And I think the people who want to improve their understanding will. And I firmly believe that is at least, you know, I think that's a very large percentage of the population. I think the majority of people want to treat people respectfully. The ones who aren't, who make the most noise, sometimes seem like they're more in number, but I think they're all bark and no bite, so to speak. So, yeah, just set up a safe space so either the trans person themselves or someone who wants to represent them with their permission can talk about trans in general, and people will communicate two ways, listen and talk, and everyone walks away better.
Because I was speaking at Freedom to Be, and you were there also.
Yes.
And that was great to hear you talking to them and to providing education and providing a forum, relaxed forum, and people could ask questions.
Yeah, and that's, I think, in simple terms, from a trans point of view, all we've ever wanted is for people to just sit down and communicate. And inevitably, people go away, go, oh, is that all it is? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay, fine. Question answered, no mystery. Thank you. You're a person like me who wants to love and be loved, achieve their potential, and if there's something like me, have a glass of something at the end of the day, you know, which we like to do. And we're all, because we're all people.
And if people are transitioning, if you get the name wrong a couple of times, that's fine.
Yeah.
But make an effort.
Make an effort. And if it's an honest slip, you know, that's fair enough. But if people don't make an effort, you know, I think that is really disrespectful, that you're saying, well, I can't respect who you are and who you need to be. And the name and pronouns are the, you know, just the primary indicators, primary, we'll say, social indicators, in a sense, of for trans people. And so not making that effort at all, and particularly the longer it goes on, that's a trans hashtag gender fail.
So where to from here for Sally?
Where to for here from Sally?
You got plans or...?
Yeah, look, to keep doing trans education, must get on with doing a personal website that talks about all these things. As we touched on 2 weeks ago, you know, I had a bit of a major personal breakthrough earlier this year with the Radical Ecstasy Weekend with Dossie Easton, and would like to build on the learnings from that that affect my life in terms of, I'll use the term sex positivity and intimacy in relationships, but also it have helped me massively as a whole person. And so I still feel like it was just such a major shift. I'm still consolidating that, where are we, 7 or so months on, and just to keep doing more of what I do. Yes, I would like to increase my abundance from what I love doing, and I'm still working on that. So there are the goals, but I feel my life is in a really settled position on so many aspects now, that I've got all the good bits and, you know, can keep building on them.
Sally, thank you so much for coming back and joining us on Spirit Lounge again.
Oh, a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.